So how's it going?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. Been busy, but good. So,
That's a
how
very, very good thing.
it is a good thing, yes. I don't know. Every time I've been depressed, I've been not busy. So, that's sometimes a good thing.
It's I think it works that way for some reason, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that is, but you know.
Yeah, well, exactly. I had a lot of thoughts over the last couple of weeks, and then I got busy with all kinds of other things and just been going all over the place here, so it's been good, so.
I think that's part of the trap we're in today is it's for whatever reason, everybody is just ridiculously busy. And I don't know what that's all about, but it seems to be we just feel like we have to do more and more and more.
Yeah, well, when you live in the city, that's kind of one of those things you have to do to make your living or whatever. I don't know.
But
It's not.
you don't live in the city though, do you?
Well, I kind of
Kind of.
there's been developments here over my lifetime, and it's kind of harder not to be influenced by those things. And there's more and more people, more and more stores going in and all this kind of crap and so on, so it's been kind of sad in that way. And so it's not the good old days when you could just find a spot, build a cabin and live there forever,
Did I I showed you those 50 lanes of traffic in Beijing, right?
Yeah, you
Yeah, I
did.
just can't believe that. I'm still amazed and shocked about it.
I know, it's pretty insane. I think I just look at the life that people used to have here, and it's where I grew up. People, even in my lifetime, would be able to find a place and just build, and that'd be fine. Just build a cabin, and you didn't have to pay a fortune for it, and so on. But you can't do that anymore, and it's more and more about trying to pay bills and trying to be in debt to people and all this kind of crap. And yeah, no, it's really no surprise to me whatsoever that people are going insane, because it's just so far removed from any truth, any peaceful, because in a balanced place, in a balanced world, creation does provide, but we're so out of balance with everything that we're just scrambling all the time, and it's just not working. Of course, it doesn't work. So yeah, I think there's a lot of more burnout now than maybe at one point in our
Have
history.
you, I posted a video on my Facebook page. I don't know that much about Facebook, but someone had sent me a video. It's just the most incredible thing. I mean, on religion. And I posted it. You know, those things scroll off so quickly. I don't even know if it's still. It's one of those mega churches. It's a little off our topic. Oh, yeah, it's still there. I don't know if you ever have seen my Facebook page, but
Yeah, I've looked at it once or twice, and I've.
you should. I mean, I don't know if you're close to where you can log in now, but this is he's evangelist in his in this big stadium, and he's walking up the bleachers there, and he just kind of touches this person, and they go into convulsions, and then two or three people around them kind of start shaking, and then he walks a few little farther, and he touches the next one. You got to see it, man. It's so absurd. It's just so I shouldn't laugh. I shouldn't do that. But it's
Well,
just crazy over the top. It somehow goes along with overpopulation, but I don't know how. It's just like the absurdity.
I was thinking about that, and I have been thinking more and more because, I don't know if you've read my calculations, at least the beginning, and we were talking about it actually, I think, at one point, and there's a whole thing of, lit cities, how cities are designed to cut people off basically from nature. It's basically the whole point of it is to keep people stuck in this sort of materialistic drive, and it's all about entertainment and trying to look cool and all this stuff. And it's just it there is a city thing going on there, and I was kind of looking over my introduction again and redoing some stuff. I've been working with Marianne on that.
You have.
Yeah, she's been helping me just kind of see it from the outside, you know, because I get kind of caught up in the trees and I don't see the forest anymore, you know.
Do you so, guys send emails back and forth, or?
Yeah. So it's a nice thing she's helping me out with.
Are you? And, sorry to interrupt you. I don't mean to interrupt. Are you doing this in German?
No.
Okay.
Oh. No, I'm doing it in English. It's a pretty complex piece of work. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Eventually, they're going to translate it into German, so that'll be nice. But,
oh, this will be from English to German. That's a switch.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It doesn't happen as often. So they're. I think they're translating another thing right now. Into German, and I'm not sure what it is, but anyway, it sounds like it might.
Do you know, is the book Meditation from Clear Visibility, is that in English now?
I think somebody's working on it. I'm not sure who,
mm-hmm.
but I've heard there is that project in the works right now, so that would be nice.
Are you versed enough in German where you could buy one of their books in German and sit down and read it and feel like you understood it?
No.
Okay.
I can carry on conversations, you know, on basic things and everyday, you know, life, that sort of stuff. And, you know, for me, that's a good start because I like to sort of have a grasp, at least a basic grasp on being able to speak the grammar and things like that. So yeah.
I'm starting to highlight some of the words on the German side today. This is the first time I've ever done this. I don't know why. And I'm looking them up. One word that I learned today was Augenblick, which I think means moment.
Oh, okay.
Or Augenblick could mean moments. So
maybe the blink of an eye.
Yeah. And I think another one, bewusst,
mm-hmm.
consciousness. Is that right?
Yeah.
See, hey.
There you go.
I'm getting there.
Yeah, no, that's how you learn, right? I've been doing these 77 meditations, whatever, and trying to do them in German too. Every time I do them,
German.
And yeah, it's a nice thing to do because you know they're short phrases, so you get to kind of repeat them to yourself and think about them, and it's nice because it's in English on one side and German on the other, so you can kind of translate it as you go along and figure out what means what and so on. So
see, one of my fantasies is to travel back in time to World War II and somehow befriend Hitler before he kind of went to the dark side and kind of somehow through enough good influence to keep him from going to the dark side and maybe at least preventing a major portion of World War II and then just to let the Germans continue with their technology.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Well, I mean, we would all be so far much farther right now, right?
Well, maybe not. Maybe. Who knows? Like, it depends, right? Like, I guess in many ways, a lot of these very difficult times do provide very valuable lessons too, right? So.
Yeah, that's true.
And there's no way that we can go back in time and change anything anyways, so.
That's true. And that's very true. You can you? You could only really be an observer, I guess.
Yeah, basically. And I think, you know, we have to use that and learn what we can. And that's, you know, that I think is the most important thing. And it's,
well, it's one of my weird little fantasies, I guess. I just.
Yeah. Well, I certainly, I think a lot of people are with you on that one.
But it would have been just really cool. On the other hand, you know, it could have went bad, and maybe if we'd have delayed World War II by 2 or 3 years, and then Germany would have just shot ahead in their technology and gotten all the jets ready and, you know, perfected everything, and then it broke out.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we would have been so far behind that, you know,
mm-hmm.
the worst could happen.
Yeah.
But then we'd just all be speaking German, right? Really know the material.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah, maybe they would have had to hold off a few years and bring in this public. But who knows? Yeah, it's an interesting question. I guess the Second World War would have never happened if it wasn't for the First World War, and the First World War would have been curtailed considerably if it wasn't for Rasputin having been shot.
So. Now, wait. You mean Rasputin had that much influence?
Yeah, I guess that's the that's sort of a thing that goes on in the contacts that they're talking about, and I guess Billy's previous personality was Rasputin, right? So
yeah.
He had some influence with the Russians, and he would have basically made it so that the Germans and the Russians would have formed sort of a truce at that time.
Wow.
All of the German troops then would have been able to, come go over to the, what is it, the West side or whatever,
mm-hmm.
where they were fighting the West, and that would have actually ended the war much, much sooner. So many lives would have been saved there, and actually, but of course the West didn't want any other superpower kind of muscling in on their territory, so they prevented that from happening. So,
is this, do you remember what contact report this is in?
I think it's fairly recent. I'm not sure exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't aware that we were going to bring it up today, but
I wasn't either.
Yeah, no, it's it's just kind of interesting, and
I didn't know this. This is great.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Patrick was explaining this to me, Patrick Cheneau, and the first time, and then I kind of read through it a few times, actually, you know, it's a very interesting fact about Rasputin is you know the disclaimer that they put on documentaries and things like that, like, oh, this is actually not a real story and all this kind of stuff and blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, that actually started the first time that Hollywood did that was actually just after I guess Rasputin had been shot, and then they made a movie about him in Hollywood or something. And I'm not sure if it was his family or somebody who actually sued because of the defamation and all that crap that was going on in this movie that was actually not true at all.
Wow.
And they won. They succeeded. And so then after that, that's where that disclaimer came from. That's the first time they ever used that. It was after they made, after they lost that lawsuit. So that's a little interesting piece of information in that's Hollywood.
That is fascinating.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the whole thing with the way the West works in many ways and is, you know, defamation is a great way to keep people's attention away from things, right? So, of course, they're doing that with Julian Assange now, trying to brand him as, you know, like the sex whatever pervert and all this kind of stuff. And
oh, yeah.
It's all unsubstantiated, and the UN, I mean, even came in and said, look, guys, this is crap. I mean, you guys can't possibly take this seriously, right? So it's just, yeah, I mean, whatever, but people, you know, they fall for it, and then the media goes along with it, of course, because, you know, that's just what they want, and then it just diverges people's attention away from, you know, what we should be actually paying attention to in our world. So
I've never ever seen a time before when so many people are just brainwashed, like out of their mind.
It's amazing.
I've never seen anything like this. It's just staggering. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I know. I was actually thinking about that, and this I actually was mentioning that I think to you a couple of weeks ago on Skype, wanting to mention some of these thoughts that I was going through, and because I was talking and with somebody, and I was just kind of thinking about, you know, the things that people miss out on because of this egotistical need, I guess, to look good to your peers.
Oh.
And I think in my experience anyways, this has happened a lot even in science. And I find it very interesting, very, very peculiar, because it's, you know, oftentimes these students will be, you know, doing everything they can to memorize for their exams, and then they'll completely forget it after, you know,
right,
or whatever it might be. And like, I was in a discussion one time with a PhD student, and we were discussing this and that, and I guess we were talking about elements in the universe, And she's like, well, you can make as many elements as you want in the universe. I was like, really? those are compounds, but that's different from elements. But, you know, this is like basic grade 9 science, you know, from high school, from beginning of high school. And this is stuff that, you know, this is foundational, should be foundational to your science knowledge. And this was a PhD student studying, you know, methane release in the north and so on. And I was just beside myself because what the hell?
Wow, that is
why do I know? Yeah, I mean, why do I know this and you don't? I mean, you're the PhD student, right? And I don't know. I've just seen this in other science people, too, that they're just so enamored with trying to impress each other that they don't want to look at things that are outside of the norm. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The anomalies, they want to just avoid those.
Yeah, yeah.
That's where the real information is.
Exactly.
Is in the anomaly. That's where the stuff gets exciting, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So because you're not cutting things out just to suit your monetary needs or whatever it might be, you know? And so it's a really interesting thing. And I was thinking about, I did find the quotation I was just looking for here, and it's one of the seven principles for the aspiring one, I guess, is one of Billy's things. And it goes like this. You should not trust the impulses of your untrained material consciousness because your consciousness is still untrained and inadequate or deficient in any respect. Search continuously for the logic in every thought process and apply this logic when you've found it. And so that's the end of the quotation. But, you know, I
think my buddy Nate, I don't know if you've met him or not, but he really likes that particular quote, too.
Okay.
I've heard him say it many times. It's really interesting. So I get both of you guys telling me this, so that must be important.
It really is, because, you know, when I had in previous years foolishly attempted to discuss, you know, things like Meyer's photos and the research and things like that that has gone into it and so on, you know, people... newcomers, whatever it might be, it's just pointless to talk.
You'll get attacked.
Well, you get attacked, and then people don't even look at the research. That's the weird thing.
Right.
They don't even look at the science. They don't use measurement, first of all. They don't use any kind of measurement to come to their conclusions. They just use their gut feeling. And this is what I think this quotation really gets into, because, you know, your untrained and inadequate consciousness, you know, that's the whole thing is... search continuously for the logic in every thought process, you know, do away with gut feelings and stuff like that, because, yeah, obviously our knowledge that we've been trained from birth to believe and to rely on, you know, has been pretty much serving, you know, the rich and powerful. And so, yeah, I don't think that's really... It permeates the entire school system. It trains you to be, you know, working for corporations or the government or whatever it might be. It trains you just basically to be a good soldier and to do as you're told. And
I think this generation, I would say anyone that's, and I don't mean this to attack anyone, whoever listens to this archive, but I would say that and it's just hard to draw a line here, but anyone maybe under 35 or 40 has been, how can I say this, is disadvantaged.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think in the last 20 years, and really in the last year, we've had so much brainwashing. It's outrageous.
It's pretty amazing.
It leaves me speechless.
People don't check their sources.
They
don't. They just don't care. They just think, oh, well, it feels good, you know, so it must be true. They don't check their sources. Like WikiLeaks, at least you can check the sources, you know. You can check and see if it's actually coming from a reliable source. But when you're looking at the media, news, anything, they're just basically telling you what they want you to hear. I mean, what's so difficult for people to understand about that? I don't get it. You know, who pays for these news organizations? Obviously oil companies, you know, energy corporations and so on and so forth. I mean,
George yeah. Soros.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, and exactly, and so on, and so on, and so on. So why anybody would dare put their, you know, thought process into even wanting to believe any of those guys, I just can't possibly come to any conclusion that makes any sense.
You know, I would really love to do is to be able to go back in time and to really observe what has happened in the past. I mean, to really observe what happened in World War II, to really observe what happened at the time of Christ, to really observe the fall of Atlantis and Lemuria, to see what that civilization was really like.
Mm-hmm.
How advanced it really, really was.
Right.
You know? And it would probably give you such a different perspective.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, just look at any of those particular stories, right? So it's very different from anything we are brought up to believe in any mainstream, anything. So, you know, the fact that the so-called Christ never even existed, right? I mean, it was based on somebody else who was called Emmanuel. I mean,
well, you know, and that's real interesting. And I go over this. I don't know if you've probably heard me go off on this a little bit about the letter J. I have a and how it didn't exist, so he couldn't have been named Jesus because there was no letter J in the ancient world.
Right.
And it took me, I didn't even know that myself until 2 or 3 years ago, which is astounding. But I have a guest coming on the show, Joe Atwell, who is one of these people. He has a book out. It's called Caesar's Messiah. And I want to, I probably should order that real quick because I do want to get a little, hopefully a little reading in that. But he'll be an interesting person to compare notes with. Just, you know.
Right on. What does he go into exactly?
Well, I don't know that much about him yet, but I think he's one of these. He's of the opinion that I think that it was completely not even a historical event.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, I don't share that point of view exactly, really, but it's good to. I like to hear different points of view. That's just the way I am.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just, I like to do that. I think that stretches my understanding. And I can't explain it. It keeps me kind of grounded.
Yeah. Well, you know, it gives you contrast to see different points of view, right?
So exactly.
That's what you have to do. Yeah, for sure.
But if, wouldn't it be something to be able to, if I had my choice, probably, and if I had to choose one, I would go back to the time of Atlantis and Lemuria.
Yeah, me too. Then I get on a spaceship and get the hell out of here.
Then you can reincarnate somewhere else.
Yeah, right.
Is that what it is?
Wouldn't that be nice?
Well, you know, I wonder what the other worlds are like.
Well, there's a lot of descriptions, I guess, of different places, right? And some of them are very, very, very peaceful, and it seems most of the ones that actually develop on their own without any interference end up being quite peaceful. And it's only when you have interference from people who want to have control or slaves or whatever it might be, kind of create these religious ideas. And that kind of permeates our society still in a big way, unfortunately, and we're still coming to terms with that very slowly.
Like with that film that I just posted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I was just noticing that. I went to your wall here and didn't look at it, but
it's worth looking at. It's pretty extreme. There's also, I remember, I don't know if you remember from the contact notes, but there's a planet called Akart, something along those lines. It's supposed to be within 2 or 3 or 4 light years.
Oh, right.
From the Earth that had the terrible overpopulation problem.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where they had the great disaster, and they did something happened to their atmosphere.
Right.
And they managed to get some of the people off, but of course not all the billions of people.
Yeah, there was hundreds of billions or something, right?
Like, how unbelievable. Yeah, just.
I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess they used to come here and gather seeds and things for.
Yeah, yeah.
World and whatever. Yeah, that's interesting. Crazy. Yeah. Yeah, well, I was, yeah, you know, like along this whole theme of, you know, you shouldn't trust your untrained consciousness and so on. I think there is just so much in that particular idea that I think would free the entire world in terms of learn to use measurement, learn to use, continuously use logic instead of your gut feeling to come to conclusions.
Well, I think the problem, and sorry to interrupt you, the problem is today people are so out of touch
mm-hmm.
with their inner eye. You know, Billy talks about the inner eye, the real spiritual self,
yeah.
that they are getting erroneous information because, you know, they just cannot really connect with the inner eye yeah. anymore.
Well, it must be really difficult in an environment where so many people are competing for really menial, dumb jobs, you know? Because when I was growing up, you know, we had to build our own house and all this kind of stuff. We had neighbors who had farms and horses, and we went hunting. We had to learn about the elements. We had to learn about architecture. We had to learn about, like, I was a musician, so I was learning about that stuff, and I was, you know, learning about art and painting and model building and all kinds of things when I was really young. And you know, when we're learning how to drive, I was learning to drive when I was 9 years old, you know, a big truck with trailer. And,
seriously?
Yeah, we had to bring in the oats from the field to the barn and bring the truck back and, you know, so on and so forth. And all this kind of stuff, you know, like the hunting, you have to learn responsibility. And when you're using these tools, like the tools for building a house or, you know, driving a big vehicle like that or driving a tractor or whatever it might be, you know, you learn the fact that, yeah, you have to be really, really, really responsible with things and knowledgeable, and don't pretend you know something when you don't, because you end your life. That's the way you end your life. And that's kind of what society's doing on a mass scale right now, because they have no exposure to anything really real or tangible that they're actually doing with their hands anymore. It's everyone's so completely cut off. They don't even see a clear night sky in their entire life anymore. I mean, yeah, you think we're cut off? I mean, you think we're ignorant? I mean, of course we are.
Wow. You know? That's a very profound thought. That hadn't occurred to me either.
Yeah, well, it doesn't. And that's the thing, is when you're living in an overpopulated place, you don't see that stuff. When you're living in an underpopulated place, yeah, you can afford to go hunting. You can, you know, it's not all, you have to learn to be careful not to wipe out the animals in that area so that you can come back next year and they're going to be continuously, you know, producing. And you know, if you wipe it out, then yeah, good luck, you know, that's it. That's the end of it. So, you know, you have to be really learn to be respectful of your environment, of nature. And when you go out in minus 50 below Celsius, you know, you can't just go out there and, you know, pretend you're going to look cool, you know, if not wear, you know, snow pants and a toque. I mean, yeah, it might look dumb, but, you know, you'll be alive. And people do things like that. I mean, just the other day, my aunt was telling me about some worker, coworker, somebody who froze her ears, you know, and didn't know about this cold, you know, and didn't realize that, you know, when you're looking at cats around here, just normal cats, house cats, like a lot of them have their ears kind of rounded, clipped off or something. Well, that's because they froze. They froze off, you know. And so, but when you don't know that stuff, when you're not aware of it and you don't understand it, you don't see it and you don't respect it enough, it can kill you. And that's the thing. When you learn to build a house, when you learn to drive when you're 9 years old and all this kind of stuff, and you're farming and you're dealing with horses and you're dealing with this and that and everything else, your consciousness, your ability to put things together in an actual way that makes sense really increases, you know, your chances of being able to do that. When you're just reading it out of a book, I mean, good luck. You're not going to get it. You know, it's like a musician who talks about music who doesn't play an instrument. I mean, good luck. It's not going to happen. So, and there's a lot of those too. I mean, you know, people who can't practice because they live in a condo or something or in an apartment. And yeah, well, yeah. You know, try playing the saxophone in that environment and see what happens.
Exactly. So I had a guest on, I always pronounce his name wrong, Joaquim Hagopian, I think. Wow. My best shot. He was saying he was in Beijing, China, a year or two ago or something like that. And during the day, there was so much smog and air pollution, you could not see the sun.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that bad.
That's amazing. And you can't drink the water out of the streams without boiling it and, you know, purifying it and all this kind of stuff. When you live in a place that's not overpopulated, you know, my friends, I have many, many friends around here who built cabins, you know, back in the day, you know, next to a lake or whatever, and you can just go in and drink it. You don't have to purify it. You don't have to...
They would,
you know,
drink it straight up?
Straight up. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's probably cleaner than anything you'll get out of the city that's been, you know, passed through I don't know how many people's bodies and all this kind of stuff. And there's a problem, I guess, in cities now, too, where a lot of people's... urine and whatever gets reprocessed into water, but then a lot of the pharmaceutical drugs and all the kinds of things like that are actually starting to kind of get recycled through other people, you know, and that sort of thing, and so it's causing all kinds of health problems too, and it's just amazing, you know. Like,
the big thing is the chlorine. For me anyway, I can't even drink the Columbus water. It's too high in chlorine.
Yeah, I actually have to bring drinking water because I have water delivery system here, but they actually chlorinate the water for whatever reason. And I bring water out from the well at the farm. So
exactly.
It makes a huge difference because I'm not shaking then. Like, as soon as I drink that chlorinated water, I'm shaking. Like,
seriously?
I'm literally, my whole body just starts shaking like I've had like 10 cups of coffee.
Are you serious?
It's disgusting.
It just bothers my stomach. You know, it bothers my stomach, but it causes you to shake. No kidding.
Yeah, it bothers everything.
Your whole body is traumatized.
Yeah, it's awful.
Oh, my God. That's horrible.
You know, why they do that? I mean, we're living in a pretty clean environment here, so why they would have to...
It's a regulation problem.
It's the regulation, yeah. It's a liability thing. People don't want to get sued and blah, blah, blah. So it just destroys everything, you know? And so if people could just somehow unplug from all of that, you know?
You know, it was so funny. When I worked for Ohio State, we had a joint thing with the University of California at San Diego, and I was writing software for cancer research. So I had to go out there and visit them. So I went to this UCSD or whatever they call it, where all of these people have cancer. Mm-hmm. And if you get the water out there, it reeks of chlorine. I cannot even drink it. And I was like, well, no wonder everyone's got cancer. I mean, it doesn't take all this research.
No.
Just get some good water, man.
Yeah.
These people were so sick, too.
Oh, man.
I'm telling you. So, yeah, what a world. What a world. Yeah.
Well, you know, you got that. And of course, you know, all that permeates into our food and things, too, right? But and the soil and so on that we grow our food in, and comes in, you know, many different ways, and then, you know, everyone who wants to have a cell phone connection, so guess how many cell phone towers are sitting out there in the cities, you know, and buildings and so on, and even on residential buildings and so on and so forth, and they kind of make them hidden, but it's all there, and that stuff pumps out a ton of nasty crap.
They built one not too far from here, and I'm still... Mm-hmm. I'm not happy about that at all.
Well, you know what you can do? I have one not far here that they built too, and I actually bought one of those meters to measure that stuff, and I put up some aluminum screen on my windows. Now, I was lucky. I live in a building that has tin siding,
mm-hmm.
and so that blocks out most of it, and then the windows it was coming through, so I actually had to get some aluminum screening, and it cut it down to almost 100%. So
wow.
So yeah, it does a big difference. It makes a very nice difference.
Well, someday you'll have to educate me. offline.
Well, that's it. That's
yeah,
all you
yeah. Need. Let me know. Yeah, maybe I don't even know if I want to know. You know, I actually bought a Geiger counter after Fukushima, and I don't know where I got it. It's somewhere in the house here.
Oh.
But I've recently heard.
I did too, actually.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, I did.
We're both
yeah.
paranoid. But, you know, they're having some other problem at Fukushima.
Oh, it's not getting better, is it?
No. They've had like a major issue.
Yeah.
Like, have you heard about this?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, go ahead.
I don't know that much about it, but they're saying words like unbelievable amounts of radiation. I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, well, it's all like they're sending in like 300 tons of water every day.
Oh, that's so insane.
Back into the ocean.
That's so insane.
Yeah, I mean, all of that radioactive water is going right back into the ocean. I mean, they can't do anything about that problem. Nothing.
They send
robots in, and the robots just die because, you know, all this radiation. I mean, they can't
fried.
Function. They get fried.
The only thing I think they might be able to do is to build a gigantic structure over it.
But the problem is that the core has melted right through the ground, and it's seeping now right through all the groundwater, and everything is completely uncontainable at this point.
Yeah, it's going to go down. There's no question. I mean, it's going to go down. I don't know how they could stop that. That would be some kind of feat of engineering to try to stop that. But
yeah,
maybe I don't know. I know it wouldn't fix the problem entirely, but maybe some kind of giant structure at least over the top. That's doing something. Because what I'm trying to say is, the whole world ought to be on this problem. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, when Billy published his information a day or two after it happened, yeah, and I don't remember who was in the contact, but it was him and somebody explaining to him what was going on, and they described it right then as a super worst case scenario, that there's pretty much nothing that we can do about it.
Jeez.
So it is getting worse, and that's the thing. It's not getting better, and of course it's not making the news. Wow, what a surprise. And so, you know, it's much worse than Chernobyl ever was. And so, yeah, they're not making anything of this in the news whatsoever. So, of course, guess who pays for it? Energy companies. Well, what is Fukushima? It's an energy company, and they want to defend their reputation, blah, blah, blah. So who cares? We're not going to get the goods on that. But unless you have to dig deeper and figure things out for yourself and try and learn about, you know, a little bit about atomic physics maybe or something, I don't know, to know what it's like, to know what happens. It's a hell of a thing, isn't it?
Well, I've got Kevin Camps scheduled for February 18th. He's from a organization called Beyond Nuclear. And he's one of the people I've had on for years now. It gives me updates on, you know, all the horrible stuff that's going on.
I bet you'll be hearing about this one, that's for sure.
I hope so. I hope so.
I'll ask him for sure. You should ask him. I would listen to that for sure.
Yeah, he's a real good guy. I'm thrilled to have him on the show.
Yeah.
So that'll, I don't know what's going on there. I haven't even looked into it.
It's unreal. Yeah, I was just watching a video yesterday on that, and somebody published something on their Facebook, and it was an update, I guess. And yeah, it's uncontainable at this point. So they're pretty much, I don't know, they might even one day have to evacuate Japan or something. I don't know. Like, it just seems so beyond being able to repair it at all, you know. And I'm just sitting there wondering, you know, here we are, we have the access to the contacts and all this stuff, and we understand where it all comes from and so on, but most of the world is completely oblivious to most of these things that are going on, and it's just amazing.
Well, you know, even holding a cell phone against your head is pretty crazy, but that's what most people do.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, even an internet router, you know, like those wireless Wi-Fi things. I put my meter up to that, and holy moly, that gives off a ton of stuff. And way more than actually a cell phone tower. I mean, because it's in your environment, it's right in your house. It doesn't have to be as powerful in that sense, but it's actually, since you're sitting right beside it, you know, I always have my computer plugged into an actual wire instead of using Wi-Fi as much as I can. So,
I've never gotten Wi-Fi for that reason.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah.
Wow. You're doing good then.
Well, I'm real sensitive to these kind of things anyway.
Wow.
Typically, okay. So I try not to do them.
Yeah, well, that's good. Good for you. Yeah, I like to take my meter out sometimes and just take it around when I'm driving around town and seeing, you know, if there's any updates.
What does it read? Just like electromagnetic energy or something?
Radio frequency.
Radio frequency.
Yeah, it's an RF meter. Yeah, it works really well. I just take it, sometimes even I take it with me hiking up mountains and things, because they usually have cell towers and things up on top of mountains, and I'm always curious to see, you know, how healthy is this right now? So,
wow.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, it's a hell of a world we're making ourselves, you know, and we don't see what radio waves are. We don't look at them. We don't see what they are. Or we don't see them at all, you know, so we have no concept whatsoever of what's sitting on our lap or what's sitting next to our ear and all this kind of stuff. And then when you see it on a meter, you're like, okay.
I wonder, we were talking about going back in time before, and I saw a little show on Tesla and Edison, and I wonder if, you know, Edison would have listened to Tesla, and we would have went down that route. I wonder if he would have a better world right now or worse.
That's an interesting question, isn't it? Yeah.
I would hope better, but I don't know, some of the wireless stuff's kind of spooky.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, considering the way that it's being used for spying and all kinds of stuff too, right? I mean, it's just not, I don't know. Yeah, I could live without it.
I often wonder, you know, I don't know if your key thing is like mine, but I can be 20 or 30 or 40 yards away from my car and be facing the other direction sometimes, and it'll still lock my doors. So I'm wondering, what is that thing broadcasting? It's got to go right through your body.
Oh, it does. Yeah, there's actually a little trick you can do to make it go way farther, like way longer distance. You just stick it up to your head, and they actually demonstrated that.
I think I'll pass.
Yeah, exactly. They demonstrated that on Top Gear one time, and I thought, oh, that's hilarious. But, you know, it certainly tells you that there's things that are, you know, interacting there for sure, you know, and yeah. I mean, I just compare these companies that are making hundreds of billions of dollars to the tobacco industry back in the day, you know. And, of course, cell phone companies and, you know, wireless companies and whatever are making billions and billions and billions of dollars. No, they don't want to part with their money. I mean, be reasonable, right? So, I mean, you have to kind of think about that and realize that maybe they're not telling us the truth, because a lot of these research investigations or whatever they might be called about wireless things and so on affecting your health, a lot of them tend to be funded by, you know, wireless industry. So it's kind of like hello.
Well, it's interesting you say that. I was reading today, and I got it right here. It's something from Arahat Athrasada. And I was talking about one of our primary responsibilities just being staying alive long enough, you know, to live out our full lifespan so that we can evolve as far as we can or whatever.
Right.
And this is Arahat Athrasada, Overpopulation Excerpt.
Okay.
And as first he is obliged to the task of preserving his life for the duration of his developmentally given time. And that's a challenge nowadays. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many invisible things that'll kill you. Or even being in traffic. I mean, traffic is, I don't know what traffic is like where you live. I mean, you live out in the middle of nowhere, right?
Yeah, we have rush minute here.
Rush Minute.
That's what we call it.
Okay.
It obviously lasts longer than a minute now, but it's getting worse.
It is getting worse.
It is, absolutely, for sure. Okay. Yeah.
You have traffic jams?
Yeah, well, not in the same sense that I've had, like, in Edmonton, for example, or, you know, big cities like that. But, you know, when I went to Edmonton and the big freeways and whatever, you're just stuck there for 2 hours and thinking, what the hell? And then you find out there's an accident or something up the road.
How many people are in Edmonton?
I think it's just over 1 million or 1.5 million or something.
That's not bad. That's pretty big.
Yeah, yeah, it's huge. I mean, I can't count that high, so I wouldn't bother anyway. So, yeah, no, it's, you know, even a small place like that, you know, and you see the dysfunction of it, and you walk down the street and you're getting a whiff of sewage and all this kind of crap in the air, and I'm like, oh my God, how can people live like this?
How many miles is that from you?
That's about 2,000 kilometers, I think.
That's pretty far.
Yeah, it's a long drive. I've driven it in 24 hours, I guess.
Oh, you made it in a day.
Yeah, I just sleep for an hour and then keep driving, right? So.
Wow.
Yeah, but that's driving pretty fast, so it's you can do it. But.
And what was your, were you visiting friends or?
I'm just recording some music and visiting this friend and that friend or whatever it might be.
Okay.
So I lived there for a few years. And.
Did you like it?
Nope. I mean, I liked some of the things regarding the music life and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm a musician, so. But other than that, I don't know. I just don't feel any attraction to it whatsoever. And it's usually I find these cities are put in places that are flat. You know, these sprawling, long, huge, massive cities that are getting bigger and bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Usually seems to be in flat locations where there's not a whole lot going on.
So you like hills, too.
I like mountains, I like rivers, I like, you know, getting out into interesting places. I mean, yeah, of course. It's just one thing I couldn't find there. You know, I was renting a car and in Edmonton, and I was like, man, I got to get out of the city and just unplug for a while. Mm-hmm. And so I drove out of the city, and then you're on farmland. Well, great. It's just square after square after square for 1,000 miles in every direction. It's like, oh, freaking brilliant.
That's not appealing. No.
No.
That's so another aspect of the whole death scene, I think.
It is horrible.
Yeah,
it's really horrible.
Yeah, that's a depressing view to me, to see that flat land that has nothing there.
Yeah.
It will eventually have crops to support the overpopulation, but.
Well, it already does. I mean, it's all just farms, right? So.
Right.
So, I mean, it's already being stretched over past its, you know, capacity. So, but yeah, no. And then you drive, and then 5 hours later, you get to a mountain, and then yeah, they don't want to build in the mountains, so they don't, right? That's like, oh yeah, come here, and it's a nice place, and then you spend, you know, however many dollars to get into the park, and then yeah, that's just not what I grew up in at all. And when you grow up in a not overpopulated place, you don't have to pay anyone to go and see a mountain or something. You don't have to, you know, it's not a park. It's just a place that is natural, and you don't have to pay somebody to go anywhere, you know, like it didn't cost us a fortune to go camping for the weekend because we could just go camping anywhere. You don't have to have a campground to go camping in a place like that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas city people have no concept of that whatsoever, even if they do go camping. So, you know, they go camping and they have to go somewhere that's designated for camping. It's just like, for crying out loud, you know, where does it end? Where does this stupidity end? I mean, it's all greed, 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 and more greed. I mean, the only people who ever talk about wanting to increase the population are government economists. Well, guess what? You know, I mean, governments are, their sole purpose is to grow and to try and be stronger than the other guys, you know, and all this kind of stuff, and grow their military or whatever it might be. You know, they're serving rich people. They don't care about the little people. And you see that in most countries, or pretty much every country in the world. So, I mean, why do people still buy into that crap? I don't get it.
I saw a very interesting presentation on immigration. And the guy he set up like some jars of jelly beans. And he symbolically said, well, take all these jelly beans and all these jars, and this represents 5-6 billion people or something like that. And then he would take a couple jelly beans out of one of the jar and put it in this other jar sitting over here. And he said, well, this other jar, we'll call this the United States, and we'll take just a few of these little jelly beans and say, oh, that's 2 or 3 million immigrants, and pop them in the small jar. And he was explaining that the 2 to 3 million immigrants will do a lot of damage to the country they're going to, but they're not even going to come close to helping the 5.2 billion people in the squalor.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and then he takes a, you know, because you know actually how much the population is growing every year. It's like minimum 80 million.
God.
So we're talking like between 25 to 40 brand new New York cities every year after the death rate is counted in.
Gosh.
You know?
I can't even understand that. That's beyond my wildest. I can't even wrap my mind around that.
Yeah, I know. Nobody can. And that's why they're counting on that. You know, these government economists are counting on that. They don't want you to think about it. They just want you to say, oh, yeah, that sounds legit, and just move on with your life and, you know, make babies, whatever. But, yeah, no, it's insane. I mean, can you count that many people added to the population? I mean, try feeding New York City for a year and see how much litter and crap and things that they have to get rid of, the waste and the sewage systems and all the water treatment systems and everything. And, you know, like you walk down the streets in New York and I can bet you it smells like farts everywhere you go, because you know what? The sewage, it's right there where people live. And I mean, there's millions of people there, and that's a small city. That's a small city by comparison to many places like Tokyo or whatever. So,
or Beijing.
Yeah.
Beijing has as many people as the whole state that I live in.
That's insane.
I know.
That's insane.
There's a mountain of garbage. It doesn't look like garbage because they do a really good job of covering it up and bulldozing it. But it's the dump, outside of Columbus.
Mm.
And it's bigger than a hill now. I would say it's like a mountain. It's a small mountain.
It's insane. Yeah.
And the birds. You just see thousands and thousands of birds.
Even here in the dump, you see thousands and thousands of birds.
So I don't know if they're benefiting, maybe. But,
well, there's one thing, you know, here we didn't used to have magpies, but because the landfills that are growing, magpies can survive off of these landfills now.
They just eat the garbage?
Yeah. So that's why we're getting a bigger population of magpies here. That's the only reason. They didn't used to live here at all. So
they're benefiting. It's one good thing.
Oh, well, if you can call that good. I mean, living at the dump all your life, I don't know if that's really a good thing, but whatever. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. No, I don't, I just don't get it.
What's the temperature right there now?
Oh, this week we had an average about minus 35 to 25, so.
So, Celsius. What would that be in Fahrenheit? About the same?
No, I think it's, I have no idea, actually. Minus 40 in Celsius and Fahrenheit are the same, but, after that, I think Fahrenheit climbs faster than Celsius, so, 25 Celsius, minus 25 Celsius here would be something, maybe, who knows, 35 Fahrenheit or something, minus 35, I don't know.
Minus 35? It would be below freezing, right?
Oh, for sure, yeah. So
way below freezing.
I would have to double check on that, on the numbers. I have no clue whatsoever. So let's see. Fahrenheit to Celsius. All right. So we got a conversion here of... Oh, I don't know. I have to... Whatever. Yeah, people can Google it at home. That's fine.
Okay.
But, yeah, no, it's cold enough. Freeze your tits pretty quick.
Yeah, you freeze yourself pretty bad. It makes me think of Hyperborea. Have you ever studied that from the Meyer material? Does that ring a bell?
It does, yeah.
Hyperborea, the land up in the north, before Atlantis and Lemuria, it was around the North Pole. There was a land of continual summer. It was always summer, and they had incredible fruit trees. It was the best climate on the planet.
Hmm.
I don't know how that's possible.
Well, I guess the Earth shifted, right? So I guess where Florida is now is where Greenland is today. I mean, sorry, I've got to reword that.
Vice versa, yeah.
Yeah, so Greenland is today where, no.
Florida was in the North Polar region up in that area. Okay. And it was beautiful there. And that's why, I don't know if you remember Eris the Barbarian. He came here from Beta Centauri. Only I would remember these things.
Yeah, you do. You remember these things rather well.
I'm fascinated with this stuff. You probably noticed that. But
it balances out the conversation nicely because I'm more into the engineering of things and you're more into the remembering the names of things and the dates. So that's great.
So this Eris the Barbarian, he attacked Hyperborea and took that area over. His son went into India, took India over in Pakistan. And from then on, they started to work at creating this great war between Atlantis and Lemuria. And one of the interesting things is the Hyperboreans, they must have left. Because eventually, they went to Mount Shasta, which is in Northern California.
Hmm.
And up until probably until 1995, there was a city in Mount Shasta of these Hyperboreans. Mm-hmm. Only about 700 of them. It was really small. But they were extraterrestrial humans who had been here something like 180,000 years. And you would see their golden-colored spacecraft come out the side of the mountain there. And it was one of the bases here on Earth for these extraterrestrials. So,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. The Earth, like I was saying before, if we could just go back and get our real history.
Yeah. Gonna get it, you know, away from what the religious explanations would rather us not discover, you know, and, I think there's a lot of protectionism going on in terms of history right now, and it's not helping us, that's for sure.
Well, some of the interesting stuff, Brian Forrester, I mean, what he's doing with the elongated skulls and all that, you've looked at that before.
He's a cool guy. I really love his stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so glad you got to have an interview with him. That's
right. I did, and I'm working on one of his buddies right now. I'm trying to get a Stephen M-E-H-L-E-R Mueller, I guess that's the correct pronunciation. He's one of the guys he goes to Egypt with. Goes on his trips with him. So, and he's written some interesting stuff, so I'm trying to get him on the show.
Cool.
Tentatively got him on the 22nd. I got some books to read here in the next couple of weeks.
That's fantastic. I love watching Brian Forrester's channel. And he always brings engineers and stonemasons and things with him instead of just historians. You know, historians, it seems, they never really think about, you know, what an engineer's perspective might be and so on and so forth. So it's really interesting when you get those guys in there because it totally doesn't make any sense what these historians are telling us in that respect at all. When you look at the hardness of stone, for example, is the most basic thing in chemistry. I mean, why would a historian ignore that? I mean, if I was a historian, the first thing I would look at is what kind of stone is this and how hard would your instruments have to be to chisel it?
Right.
You know, let alone sand it down to shiny, almost mirror-like smoothness. I mean, that's insane. So to think that they could do that with copper chisels or whatever it might be, you know. So yeah, it's brilliant. I love Brian Forrester's YouTube channel.
I think we're in a period where the paradigm is slowly changing.
It is. It's more of a grassroots change, isn't it?
It is, because the people at the top just want to stay at the top, and there's very few people at the top. There's some.
Yeah.
Very few people at the top that are willing or want to change.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, that's true. So I think we're quite fortunate, that we don't have to depend on them to make the change. And that's
That's what's interesting because I think there is a grassroots change that's going on.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful. I mean, that's, the reason why the internet is such a great tool. you can do your own research then. You can depend on your own measurements and make your own measurements of things, and don't have to depend on experts anymore.
Did you say that you don't have that much interaction with Figu Canada that much?
A little bit, and not as much as the Switzerland, because it's just so much easier for me personally to get to Switzerland than it is to get to Eastern Canada. So
Wow.
try and make sense of that.
The one of the guys you brought up, I forgot the name of the guy you brought up before, is he in Figu, Canada?
Which guy?
One of the
Patrick Sunil?
Patrick something, yeah.
Patrick, no, he lives in Switzerland, and he's
Oh,
been.
of course, of course. Okay.
Yeah, he's been there for decades, I guess. So at the center there and working there tirelessly and doing his stuff. So
So your calculations, you call them the calculations, but what they really do is explain why the Meyer material is legit. I mean, you created a hypothesis for a better, for lack of a better term, that says if you're going to have extraterrestrial contact, it should be here, it should be at this time, and then it just happened to perfectly describe the Meyer case, right?
Exactly. I did them long before I discovered the Meyer case, and I did them in order to find this particular case that I didn't know the name of it. I just knew by. I guess I built this framework. I don't know if they're calculations per se, because they don't really use numbers, but I just use this framework that is really difficult to refute. And it's just using very, very high probability things that, anybody and their grandma can figure out, anyone knows, when film photography was in its heyday, and everyone knows today that they use Photoshop. Everyone knows when personal computers came on the market, and everyone knows where Switzerland is neutral, politically neutral, and isn't central on the globe. It's easiest to get to from Australia or Canada, and that's why world wars happened there, and so on. And everyone can check these things, and everyone knows that Switzerland is, got one of the best democracies in the world. They vote on issues 4 times a year, not just on people.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing. So it puts Canada to shame, that's for damn sure. And certainly the EU. But that's another story for another time. But and it's it,
Do you know the approximate population of Switzerland?
I think it's about 9 million or something. Is it 9 or
Is
10
that
million?
all?
Well, it's a pretty tiny country. I mean, you can drive across it in like a few hours. So,
Wow.
so it's much smaller than the territory where I come from, which is, I think it's about 10 times the size of Switzerland, and there's only like 35,000 people here. So, of course, nobody wants to live in this kind of cold. So that's good.
Now, what city do you fly into when you're going to Switzerland?
When I fly, usually actually I go to Germany, and then I just take a plane or a train or something to Switzerland. So they
So
used
you
to have.
take a train into Switzerland?
Yeah, it's a nice thing to do. I'm not sure if it's as safe anymore now with the refugee issues that they're having, so I'm kind of avoiding that situation now. But
Did they let a lot of refugees in Switzerland?
in Germany, so you have to go from Frankfurt, then you take a train, and then. But there are quite a few. I guess there was a number that they published in Figu recently. There's about 915 criminal refugees that have made it through into Switzerland.
Oh, really? Wow.
Relatively recently, so I guess it's in the last year or so, I think.
That's not good.
No, so it's a lot of these people that are coming over are actually just men, first of all, not with families, and most of them are criminals and so on. And
The I was just listening to the president of Syria today, Assad, saying, yes, the people, the immigrants, a lot of them are terrorists. He's flat out about it.
Yeah,
We
obviously.
have so many bleeding hearts here in the United States that are so worried that we're not going to allow the poor Muslims in. I'm like, wait a minute here. We need to think about this.
I would think so, yeah. They're not making any secret of the fact that they want to, you know, destroy the Christian world or the Western world or whatever.
Yes.
So they don't make any secret of that. So what the hell?
There was a, I saw a picture of a mosque in the United States here that had a sign out front basically saying, we're going to kill you eventually. Something along those lines. It was very bold, very terrible. It was just terrible.
It's unreal. I was just watching some stuff yesterday and some riots or protests or whatever, Islam people protesting in London, and the signs that they had were pretty much along those lines too, and there were a lot of them. So it's, you know, this is happening almost every day in France and so on too, in Paris, and I don't know, the media just doesn't want to admit it, and I think the whole point is that they want to bring in these people so that they can have an excuse then to biochip everybody and keep track of everybody and spy on everybody, you know, 24/7. So
I think our, at least in the United States, the mainstream media now is probably owned by Saudi Arabia. There's a prince named Tawid bin Talal, it's the best I can pronounce his name, who for a while owned a major portion of Fox News.
Wow.
Yeah, George Soros owns a lot of these companies as well.
Yeah.
And there is a very secret dark order, as it says in the Meyer material.
Yep.
They exist.
Yes, they do.
And they're trying to... I like the way it says it in the Goblet of Truth. We live in a consciousness-conditioned tyranny.
Mm.
That's a very important term, if you just think about it for a while. We're in a tyranny, but it's really a tyranny of our consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an extension of the Roman Empire, even, he says, Billy says.
Yeah, well.
And I remember him saying also that the people of the earth are indolent and obtuse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem now.
Yep, it's amazing. I was growing up wondering, what the hell are people doing? You know, they were telling me, you know, learn this math in grade 3 and, you know, you'll go on and prosper in life. And then I realized, look, you idiots, nobody's applying any of this math to any of the problems that we're facing in our world. So the financial collapse that's looming and, you know, and the environmental collapse that's resulting from the overpopulation and all this other stuff. Nobody's applying any of this math to any of those problems. So I thought, what a bunch of idiots. Are you guys asleep? Are you guys hypocrites? Are you guys...
I think it's real easy to fall asleep.
It is.
It's also very easy to succumb to peer pressure.
Yeah, exactly. People want their paycheck, don't they?
They do want their paycheck.
Yeah. So they'll say anything to get it. That's just the way this world works, but...
It's a strange truth. It's very, very strange. You know, and it's so weird because driving into Columbus, there are only 6 lanes of traffic. But I get, you know, I get traffic jams too. But I'm thinking 50 lanes of traffic. I just cannot get over that.
It's unreal. Yeah. Well, for me, 6 lanes is big, you know. But
it is. It is.
It is huge.
It seems big, but it's nothing. We're living almost like in some kind of parody. It's.
Can you imagine the amount of concrete that it takes to build a 6-lane highway in every single city on the planet?
Six is big enough. I've got to go to Beijing, I guess. I don't even know if I want to. I think I would be depressed.
Forget it. I don't want to. I already know what it is. You know, you can do arithmetic. You know, you don't need to go there and see it.
You know, it's really interesting because, you know, we're taught here, if you read these books, about being neutral, positive, and thinking the right way, being healthy in your thinking. Mm-hmm. So you have to even when you're looking at the problems in the world, you have to also be able to detach from it, too.
Well, yeah, exactly. You have to be able to acknowledge the fact that, you know, people, all individuals have their own learning to do, their own lessons in life, and, you know, they're making a mess in this life. They'll be back in the next life on this planet, and rest assured that they're going to be the ones living in that planet that they created in the previous life. So they get to learn continuous lessons as they go along, and hopefully, you know, well, I mean, the motivation by, you know, many, many people now is to try and start cleaning this up. And I think more and more people are waking up to the fact that, yeah, maybe we should clean up this mess and maybe stop, you know, trying to prevent, maybe stop ourselves from creating new huge messes that we already know how to prevent. And, you know, people always tell me, oh, well, you know, it's inhumane to talk about overpopulation and reducing the population. Well, have you thought about how inhumane it is to let, you know, starvation, famine, you know, just wars and diseases and all that stuff? I mean, do you think that's more humane?
I think in Africa, the mothers will have somewhere between 8 and 9 children, knowing only one will survive.
That's insane. Yeah.
Can you imagine living with that grief?
That's insane. Yeah, Africa, I think, has been one of the fastest growing continents in the world in the last few decades. And so,
you know, I mean, it's horrible enough to lose a pet. What if you lost 8 of your children?
Yeah.
To starvation.
It's crazy.
You know, it's beyond insane.
And what's the point?
Yeah, that's, you know what, and this is really, I don't mean to be depressing, but the thing that I've adopted, one of the sayings I have is the planet Earth has become the planet of unnecessary death.
But necessary lessons. And, you know,
good point.
Life is a giant physics lesson. That's the way I look at it. And these lessons are so useful and so beneficial. Huge benefits. So it's, I think, in every disaster and every catastrophe and problem and inefficiency and so on and so forth, there is a lesson to be learned, and we have to pay attention. We have to look at it, not get drunk and do, you know, whatever it might be to try and forget.
Mm-hmm.
We have to confront what we're looking at here, deal with the situation.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, that's the only thing that will solve it. And each individual has to come to terms with that on their own. Each and every individual. That's the only way it's going to change. And so,
you know, it's also interesting, too, because we all have different sensitivities and different abilities. And things affect different people differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, unfortunately, with a lot of the population, the way people cope is through kind of closing their eyes, mm-hmm. making themselves as unaware of things as possible.
That's what I confronted when I first started doing my calculations, because I was pretty much suicidal then. And I was a 9-year-old boy and starting life, and I
young.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just, I don't know what it was, but that's what it was. And so I had that, and my way of dealing with that was, I have to look beyond these problems, but I have to look at the problems first so that I can understand them, and then you can see beyond the problem.
Wow.
But if you don't, you just end up stuck in the problem, and that's, you know, you're stuck with the problem, and until you do that, you're still stuck with the problem, and that's just the way it's going to be. So
I didn't even know that I was looking at problems. I only knew when I was young that I could see things, and I knew the way it made me feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that there was something wrong, but I didn't even identify it as a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way things were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so now that I've had the chance to live for a while, now that I can understand, you know, they are problems.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine growing up in a city like Beijing? I mean, if you're 12 years old or 10 years old and people wear masks all the time to walk around and you don't see the sun because there's so much air pollution.
Mm-hmm.
And when you drive off, there's 50 lanes of traffic and you may be in a traffic jam for the rest of the day. That's your normal life.
It is.
So you would not have a perspective to know
exactly
what's a problem and what's not. You know it makes you miserable, right?
Right.
You know you don't like to see it, but that's all you know, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a really funny thing, actually. It reminded me of when you said that about the Beijing and so on. Because when I was in Switzerland, in some of the more touristy areas like in Grindelwald and so on, there are a million Chinese tourists.
Really?
It's really amazing. And you know what the funny thing is? You go up on top of the mountain. There's these train things, these trolley things that go up on the mountain. And on top of the mountain, there's like a gift shop and so on and so forth. And then you can get off and go on these trails and go hiking and so on. And but you know what? These Chinese people, they never do the hikes. They never do. Yeah, I've never seen a single Chinese person actually doing those hikes. They go up the mountain, they take a bunch of pictures, they buy a bunch of whatever trinkets, and then they keep going down the other side of the mountain to the next town. Mm. And then they just keep going through every town and country and whatever, so on and so forth, just like that. And mm. I went up and we did some hiking, and we just like 80 meters out of that little zone, and it was dead quiet, and there was, you know, almost nobody there. And we just, the further we got, there was literally, you know,
because
no,
are you saying
they're so used to being around lots and lots of people?
Yeah.
They're so afraid of the natural things, the natural world. And it's just a thing that happens when people grow up in cities most of the time. And they don't want to have any curiosity about what's beyond the city, you know, what's beyond the city wall, you know, it might kill you know, this kind of stuff. So they have an ignorance about it, but they also have a fear about it that prevents them from exploring it. And, you know, we had a bunch of kids up, and I think I was talking about this last time from Vancouver, and they were just visiting our small town, you know, and seeing what it's like to live in a natural place. And they were absolutely blown away. They had never, ever imagined that you could just go out of your door, walk out the door and go camping, you know?
and it's so, not even technically a park.
Exactly. It's not a park. It's not anything. It's just land. It's just land nobody lives on that, you know, there's, yeah, you know,
I think I'd really like it where you live, but I'd probably only like August and June.
Yeah. they were not here in wintertime, that's for sure. I had this guy come up from Australia, and he just got off the plane, and it just slammed. The weather went right down to like minus 45 for like a whole week.
Oh.
Right when he pretty much got off the plane. And so, yeah, that was a hell of an experience for him. And the most he had ever experienced in terms of cold is like early in the morning in Australia when he was on his bike or something, on his motorbike, and his ears got slightly cold, you know.
Wow.
And here he was, you know, dressed to the nines and still freezing, and so yeah, and he got pretty sick that week. And
oh, he did.
Yeah, but yeah, we just got out as much as we could anyway, and I, you know, took him out ice fishing and stuff like that, and on the skidoo, and we went down the river and up the lake and so on and so forth, and you know, there's nobody there, and it's yeah, you know, for him that's a hell of a new experience. And
so the river wasn't completely iced over.
Oh yeah it was. Yeah.
Oh, it was.
Yeah. Oh yeah, there's like a meter of ice, you know. I mean, when it's cold like that, it was probably minus 25 for a few months before he came. And then it went right down to minus 45. So we had lots and lots of ice. I mean, you could probably land a jumbo jet on that. So
no kidding. Wow, crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah.
And he lives in a desert, basically, right?
Well, he lives in Australia. I guess, yeah, he does mining and stuff in some of the more desert places and so on. So, yeah, it's, you know, but it's a hell of an experience for people. And I notice it, you know, when I see that I grew up with things that I totally took for granted when I was growing up, you know, and seeing what it's like to live in a place that isn't affected by people. People have no clue. They don't. Everyone, most of the population on the planet, probably 98 or 99 point whatever percent of people in the planet, on this planet, live in cities or very condensed areas, or, you know, even if they live in the outskirts of some place, it's, you know, not untouched at all.
I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's you know, so to grow up in that environment, it was very easy for me to make the calculations. It was very natural, you know, and it's not, it wasn't out of my, beyond my reach at all. You know, it was just the next step for me. And it was just following my observations and not trying to ignore them. I wasn't trying to ignore them. I wasn't trying to suppress them.
So how long do you think you are away from getting your framework up on a website somewhere?
Actually, I think we're getting fairly close, and the introduction is finally coming along, so that's nice. And now that Marianne is helping me, she can kind of see the whole thing, you know, in terms of somebody who hasn't read it before and who doesn't know these things, perhaps, or whatever, versus me, who's, you know, grown up with it, and I'm just kind of blah 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 and explaining things, but not really from the making it so that other people can understand it, you know. So that's the main trick. And,
you know what's so interesting is she is not even an official FIGU member, is she?
No, she's not a core group member. Yeah. No, she's I guess she was one of the three people who didn't take the oath or something. She didn't need to or something 13 something thousand years ago, and but that she would still stay with the mission. And so on. So
that's such an interesting story, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really cool. So I guess there's two other people.
But they don't know who they are, right?
Yeah, I think they do. I think one of them. I won't say much more about that. But yeah, okay. It is interesting. And I think if people want to find out, they can. That's fine.
You know, the other thing that's really weird about all this. I say weird, I say strange, because I think whenever you deal with truth, you're dealing with, there's going to be some strangeness. Is the people from Lyra Vega are in a different space-time configuration, mm-hmm. which always is a stretch for me.
Yeah.
It just twists my mind, you know.
What the hell does that mean, eh? Yeah.
I have some theories. I think about that.
Oh yeah,
a fair amount. And I've noticed that truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah, who needs to read fiction? I don't get it.
I don't get it either, because I have all the strangeness I can handle. I don't.
Yeah, exactly.
I have more than enough.
Yeah, and it's so much to deal with, and you have to live your life and try and make sense of things so that you can improve things. So why bother with fiction? I just don't get it.
I don't get it either. Man, I've kept you forever. I appreciate it. It's been a fun chat.
Yeah. Well, time flies as always, but
I'll post it too. And think of a good title. Send me a message. All right. We'll see you.
Sounds good. Okay. See you later.
Bye-bye.